beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter. At 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Well, 2018 has been a very busy year for Howard University. The year is not quite over yet. And tonight we sit down with Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick to talk about some of the issues here at the university, including questions about Howard University Hospital and public health east of the river here in the District of Columbia. That and much more coming up. If you have a question, if you have a comment, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Dr. Frederick, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about this East End Equity Act. In brief, George Washington University has entered an agreement with the District of Columbia to essentially build a hospital east of the river. This has been an issue for a very, very long time in wards 7 and 8 when it comes to people being concerned about quality health care. Why is that agreement a concern for you specifically and the hospital?
So first thing is we are fully in support of having a new facility built there. The concerns with the Equity Act is that it also includes a provision in it that it bypasses the certificate of need process, which is the process that all entities who are going to provide new facilities for the provision of healthcare go through, and that is to ensure that the need is there, that it will serve the needs of the community appropriately, et cetera. And it gives the district or whatever region, most regions use it, some modicum of control over who does what. So somebody doesn't show up all of a sudden and put up a 1,500-bed facility in the middle of a city. It calls for waiving that. We think that that's something that shouldn't be done, especially given the number of healthcare systems you have in the city, et cetera. We think that that may provide somebody with a competitive disadvantage. This Equity Act, to our surprise, also included a provision that the GW, although this is a public hospital, UHS in a partnership with GW called District Health Partners would run this facility exclusive of anyone else. In the past, if you look at the construct of DC General Hospital, that the clinical services were actually provided by both Howard University and Georgetown. So we had medicine services, surgical services, etc. And that worked very well for many decades, including allowing for training programs, etc. The third thing is it includes a 270-bed tower, new tower for GW at their Foggy Bottom site. From what I understand, they've been running at capacity, and so they probably need that tower. But again, you just had a hospital in Northwest D.C. in Providence close, and this would give them those added beds, and we're not sure if the dynamics of the competitive disadvantage that would cause for Howard University Hospital have been taken into consideration. Again, nothing against GW or UHS, two fine institutions, but when we look at what we provide as an academic medical center, we have to express some concern and some potential alarm at where this may leave us, especially given the fact that we're still sending more African Americans to medical school than anyone else in the country. And last year, you had less African American males apply to medical school than in 1976. So what Howard is providing is not, we don't look at it as simply just a hospital. We look at it as an academic medical center.
202-319-7810, 202 319-7810. We're talking with Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick about all things Howard University, including questions about public health, a hospital east of the river here in the District of Columbia. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. So let's back up a little bit and get an understanding of what is actually happening here. Because I said at the onset, quality health care east of the river has been a question for as long as I can remember, as a native Washingtonian. Okay, so let us be clear. Since I was a kid, and probably even before that, there were questions about that. And what we've seen recently with United Medical Center is that their obstetrics unit has been shut down because of issues there. There's that. As you mentioned, Providence is closing at the end of this year. And there are many, many patients, people who have emergency services and other services that come from Ward 7, Ward 8, and Ward 6. And they come to Howard University Hospital. And so you said, to your surprise, there's this agreement. So am I to be clear that this agreement, that Howard University Hospital has not been included, considered?
That's a great question. So we actually, the district did run a process through a consultant by the name of Huron, and we actually did submit a proposal back on their deadline of December 22nd, 2017. And did not formally hear of the ultimate outcome of this until the day before the press announcement, which occurred sometime this summer, several months later, that they were going to go with someone else. We attempted to partner with an operator, in other words, someone else who would operate the hospital. We would provide the clinical, the practitioners, that type of infrastructure, the clinical infrastructure. To facilitate that, we, in our agreement, which was a 24-page proposal, we were very clear about building out an ambulatory care network and things of that nature as well. Our operator, from what we understand with the city that we chose, did not provide the best proposal to the city. And so our interest was looking for another operator with the city. As I said, this process went on for quite some time, and we found out the day before that they were providing. I say that to explain that we are in full support of there being a hospital in Southeast in Ward 708. The issue is, what does that hospital do? Is that hospital a triage facility or a full-bodied acute care facility? Our perspective is that it needs to be a full-blooded acute care facility, recognizing that there are some quaternary type of investigations and clinical activity that you may not necessarily want to invest in there, but certainly there's a certain level of tertiary care items you want to. So, for instance, you mentioned the closing of obstetrics. High-risk pregnancies are an issue. The incidence of renal disease and diabetes and those types of things disproportionately affect the residents in Ward 7 and 8 when you look at healthcare statistics in the district. So, yes, you would want a facility there to be able to, I think, manage high-risk obstetrics, as an example. And why is that important? Why is it important that the residents of 7 and 8, if they get certain types of illness, they are treated where they live? It's important because that's one of the social determinants of health, is going to be that ability to access, and whether or not that access is predetermined by where you live, your ability to for transportation, etc. And so for you and I, it may sound simple to ask a resident to leave Ward 7 and 8 and to come over to Howard or to come over to another facility in Northwest to get prenatal care. But let's be honest, if that person has other kids, They have childcare things they have to do. They're working and they don't have a car and they're taking public transportation. Then you can see all of those things start becoming a burden. And whether they can get that prenatal care is less and less likely, which means their pregnancy becomes more and more high risk because the interventions are occurring later and later. And the outcomes of that pregnancy then become worse. And this is what part of what we're trying to avoid. So the facility has to be of a certain size, and it has to be equipped enough to provide certain levels of care to ensure that those patients get the right levels of care. On the same token, there are other things that are very much specialized, such as transplantation, where GW Hospital currently does that. And I think clearly those are patients that should be transferred to have that type of operation and so on done at the primary George Washington site. And if they're running at capacity now, they probably do need, as their partner UHS, their operating partner of the hospital, has stated, they do need another tower to do that. But the plan must afford the residents of 7 and 8 the ability to get the majority of services, you know, in their ward.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking to Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick about all things Howard University, including public health east of the river and Howard University Hospital. If you have a question, if you have a comment, give us a call. Lines are open again at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. To put a finer point on it, as you just mentioned, if you have transportation and you have to leave your community for prenatal health care or any kind of health care, you can. But I would argue that the reality is you would not want to. You would certainly want to have not only quality care in your quality care, but also convenient quality care.
One of the other determinants of that outcome is the support system around you. Right, so it's not just the hospitalization, but what happens after that fact, right? Can you access those physicians easily? Can you access a neighborhood and a community that has supplies, has medications, has a pharmacy in it? You know, there's several other things, nutrition. You know, I think, Councilmember Gray has to be commended, because one of the things prior to this bill that he had spoken about and even put in some early legislation on is looking at the East End, as he refers to it, more broadly, looking at the fact that you have a food desert in that area. So, yes, you can have a kidney transplant done in Northwest D.C., but then when you go back to your neighborhood, if you don't have good healthy options, the outcome of that transplantation ultimately is not going to be good. So we really have to ensure that this is a comprehensive look at how you provide that care. And at Howard, my responsibility is to make sure that we don't compromise the good work that Howard's Academic Medical Center is doing. And for long periods of time, I think that it has been unrecognized and underappreciated what Howard University has meant to the city. There's 1,700 physicians that practice in the DMV area who are Howard alum. And again, I don't think that we appreciate that fact. We appreciate that impact that these physicians have. And I think that anything that causes us to have to close Howard University College of Medicine and its hospital, I think is something that we have to make sure that we stand up and, you know, speak out against and make sure that the right things are being done for the overall good, so that everybody, you know, wins. And certainly that the citizens first and foremost win, and I think that they have been winning because they have had Howard-trained physicians in their communities.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let me talk to Dr. Forget, calling from Maryland. Dr. Forget, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I want to thank Dr. Wayne Frederick for his leadership. and really addressing a very key issue. I'm also co-chair of the Ward 8 Health Council, appointed by Mayor Barry a couple of years ago. But we've been very impressed that Dean Mighty came to our Ward 8 Health Council meeting and told us about how the university's concerns about helping meet the needs generated by closure of the OBGYN, and primarily the absence of prenatal care as well.
Dr. Forget, let me hold. Can you hold just a moment? Because I want you to make your point, and I've got to take a break. But I also have a question for you as well. So please stay with us. Also, Sylvia calling from D.C. We're going to talk to you as well. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking with Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick about Howard University Hospital, public health east of the river, and other issues. So please give us a call. Lines are still open, and the Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of this conversation and your phone calls in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking with Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick about some of the issues regarding Howard University Hospital, the medical school, and health for people living across the river, east of the river, in wards 7 and 8. Dr. Frederick is in studio with us. We have Dr. Forget, who I was calling in with a question. Please, Dr. Forget, please continue your point.
Yes, and again, Howard University physicians, our graduates are being impacted by the closure of Providence as well. Dr. Ebay and Dr. Williams from MedKai testified. But my concern is, Dr. Frederick, the impact of both closures on the capacity of Howard and how is Howard going to really meet the new needs, especially you've been denied a lot of help from some other contracts in the city, as we know. So how is this impacting on Howard, and is your concern really being understood by the administration to give Howard the resources it needs to really address the needs of the community?
Yeah, I appreciate your question. So what we have done, and I'll give you very, very direct examples, when we were informed that United Medical Center would no longer be delivering babies providing obstetrical care, we immediately started to take an assessment of our services. That was shortly followed, maybe within a two-month period, of Providence announcing that they were going to stop providing obstetrical care as well. And so immediately we had to expand our services. We had to hire new physicians. We had to open up another ward to facilitate that. All of that obviously requires capital investment, all of which we did on our own accord to step in and step up to provide that care for the citizens. So it is proving to be a financial burden, as we have to obviously upgrade. The return on investment is downstream. But let's remember that the majority of these patients have Medicare and Medicaid. So, you know, and most of those programs, when you look at what the DC Healthcare Finance, you know, what that overall program does and the MCOs in terms of the reimbursement, it's not like having commercial insurance. So we clearly are not, this is not something where we're making a whole lot of money. As a matter of fact, especially in the area of OB, you're taking on high-risk patients who, as I said, are traveling quite a distance. And as you know, with obstetrical care as well, there's high litigation as well. So we've taken on all of that burden without any adjustments from the city or any of the insurers. And so that's something that we have to continue to look at. My fiscal My fiduciary responsibility at the university means that I have to report into my board and the community to make sure that that's not putting us in harm's way, especially since we recently turned the hospital around successfully. This is the type of thing that could take us back there. We are very concerned about our graduates who were practicing at Providence Hospital as well. They obviously are significantly impacted. And again, giving a physician such short notice that you may be closing a hospital where their primary practice, if not 100% of their practice is a significant issue. It's not like lots of other jobs where you can just move to a new office and move to another hospital. You have to go apply for privileges and go through all of that process. So we're very concerned about that. So we're trying to engage those physicians as well to try to bring them in. But ultimately, we are concerned that if all of this is not looked at from a comprehensive manner, Howard Hospital could be significantly hurt. And we've been down this road before. When DC General Hospital closed, there was not a lot of discussion with Howard University. And as a result, Howard University started taking a disproportionate share of uninsured patients in the city prior to the city having such a comprehensive insurance program. That led to a decrease in our finances. And people forget these stories, and then they look at Howard Hospital and say, well, you guys weren't providing this, or the quality wasn't that. And all of those things require investment, requires capital investment. And while we were stepping up and stepping in to take care of the citizens of the district, when the safety net hospital went away, no one really looked at where was the money coming from and why were the finances eroding. And I think, I hope this go around the city works with us to avoid us getting in that situation as well.
Dr. Faggett, you're in, do you live in Ward 8?
No, I have an office in Ward 8, Goodhope Road.
Okay.
I'm co-chair of the Ward 8 Health Council.
Oh, Calvin I see.
Smith, and I co-chair that.
How long has your office been in Ward 8?
3 years.
3 years?
Correct. Okay. I take care of patients. I'm a faculty at Howard, and I also see patients at Hillcrest Family Children's Center.
Okay.
And so my patients and families are being directly impacted by this. And the concern is, though, that this puts Howard at risk. We had a patient go from United Medical Center, a pregnant patient with ectopic pregnancy. She had to get in a cab, go all the way to Howard. So she has a problem at Howard. Howard gets really criticized for any complications of that patient.
Yeah.
So I think Dr. Frederick is being very generous, because not only is it impacting on them financially, but then they're at risk of also have been criticized for poor care. And when it really is, as he said before, access to care for patients in Ward 8, going across the 11th Street Bridge.
Right.
People are going to have trouble if you got a traffic or whatever.
Dr. Faggett, I want to ask you a question. Even though your practice has only been in Ward 8 for 8 years, I would think it's safe to say that you've seen the changing face of the community in Ward 8. Is that safe to say? Gentrification, to be precise?
Right. I was in practice Dr. Frederick mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
I ran detox unit at DC General Hospital.
Okay. Well, this is why I ask.
Right.
What impact or do you believe that this maneuvering and the situation with this agreement has anything whatsoever to do with the changing face of the community east of the river? In your opinion?
It would appear that there's been less access to care provided to our citizens. They say, well, you have 4 unity clinics out there. Dr. Nesbitt makes the point that patients choose to go elsewhere. Well, we need to look at what kind of real access is there. Now that Howard is coming on board, perhaps there will be better access, as Dr. Frederick has said. But there's been a very, the maternal mortality rate has increased over the past year or so, and it's getting worse as of this year.
Yeah.
And these are the kind of statistics that are happening with what's going on east of the river.
Mm-hmm.
It would appear that that the pregnant woman east of the river has no place to deliver, neither Providence nor United Medical Center. They closed the Medicaid nursery at hospital centers. So all these things really decrease access, as Dr. Frederick keeps emphasizing.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Faggett, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and your experiences. I really appreciate your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Sylvia, calling from D.C. Thanks for hanging on, Sylvia. What's on your mind?
Thank you, and good evening to you.
Hi.
And also, good evening to you, Dr. Frederick.
Hi, good evening.
Yes, my question to you is, I don't see a lot of concern for mental illness in the community in D.C. Why is that?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a great question. And there is actually a lot of concern, I would say, among the medical health professionals, but I don't think that that's filtering down to the community. Some of that is from stigma, to be quite honest. I think in a lot of our communities, we stigmatize mental health illness. And I think that that's unfortunate because it really is a major issue that needs to be addressed, just like high blood pressure. If you look around the city as well, the closure of Providence is going to impact mental health disease and the other things that come along with it. They had an outfit over there that looked at opioid abuse as an example, one arm of what our psychiatrists at Howard tend to work on and see. Okay. And when you look at the opioid crisis, that could be a significant issue for us. That's along the spectrum of disease processes that you're talking about that we need to be investigating and putting up even more, building out more infrastructure to manage.
Yes, maybe even more ads as well, like maybe TV ads. But we definitely need to get it out. We need to get the awareness out that there are people that are concerned.
Yeah.
And for me, I would say we need to get more facilities involved as far as better treatment. And when I say better treatment, I mean like for my son. He's going through something now, but he's from Maryland. He's been residing with his dad. So he's in Florida at the moment. He's in a great program. And my question is, why D.C. does not have these programs? You have to go through so much to get in a program, and then when you do, they basically deal with, as far as in quote-unquote insurance is concerned.
Yeah. Well, let me see if Dr. Frederick can at least try to address that, because certainly, and she's right, you know, while there is broader, I think, acceptance. One could say that mental health issues are coming out of the closet, coming out of those back rooms of homes, and families are talking about it, but it's still kind of an uphill climb. And I would not just within the Black community, the community at large, but she's right, you know, treatment is still a concern.
Yeah, it's a major concern. And I think where she was heading in terms of educating and the public and raising public awareness, I think that's certainly somewhere where we have to start. And you're right, we're talking about it more, but like everything else, we have to come up with solutions. And those solutions do mean that we have to have an investment in programs that help people that also continue to get them to be able to function within the society in a way that is productive and is fruitful. Recognizing what the wide spectrum of it is, from, you know, folks having anything from a mild depression to something really major where they have suicidal ideations and or even thoughts and intentions. And so I really think it's critical, again, from a resource point of view, these things do require significant resources. And when you look at how our system is built from a business point of view, this, unfortunately, right now, the way some of the reimbursement and stuff works is not a very profitable business in the city. And let's be frank about that. And I think a lot of the healthcare facilities are challenged by that, by trying to raise the awareness, by trying to say to the insurers and the insurance companies that this is a real significant health issue, and the practitioners in this area have to be appropriately, you know, compensated because of what is required to do this. This is not a one-off visit for, you know, 15 minutes. This is an ongoing interaction and intervention, and not always involving meds. There's a wide spectrum of psychotherapy and so on that has to be involved. And then when you think of things from job training programs and all those other things that need to go into it, it does require quite a bit of resources. And again, it does require the commitment and the will of the officials in the city to make that type of investment.
Well, Sylvia, thank you so much for your phone call. And please, you keep speaking up, speaking out. And certainly we wish your son the best of health. And again, thank you so much. Let me go to Wayne calling from Upper Marlboro. Wayne, thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How y'all doing tonight?
Doing just fine.
Great. I'm one of GW employees. I hate to say it, but it's not the best place out there. The doctors are refusing to sign medical records for patients. We can't even bill the insurance company. So this is a big fraud company. I hate to tell you guys that I reported it to Medicaid. I reported it to Medicare. It's just a whole lot of things that what we see the surface is beautiful, but it's not all cut behind the scenes. I'm looking to get out of there. I'm one of the managers there, so I see all the stuff. We fight with the doctors because we're trying to get them to sign records. They refuse to do it, so we're pretty much losing millions of dollars. Doctors are basically jumping off board. The hospital is loaning us money. This is the doctor side. They're loaning the doctors money. The doctors, what's called MFA, loaning them money to stay afloat. That's how bad it is with MFA, which is the doctors that will go into this new facility. We're already at UHC now.
Well, Wayne, let me stop you because I don't want to get into, and I appreciate your phone call and your passion about it. And certainly we're not, necessarily here to, to bash GW or the like. And the thing that we really do want to focus on in this particular conversation is trying to provide the best kind of healthcare for the communities east of the river. And as Dr. Frederick said, this isn't even about this particular agreement. But Howard University should have a stake in it, as it has in this community for more than 100 years. Correct, Dr. Frederick?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yeah. We've been here for 150 years. I understand the concern that Wayne is expressing. But as you rightly said, we've interacted with MFA. Let me just be on record to say, with Medical Faculty Associated, my concern is really just the quality of care and what our academic medical center has given to this to this community for 155 years, and not just preserving it, but making sure it thrives. And I think that we have to come up with a solution that helps, continue that legacy.
Thank you so much, Wayne. I appreciate it. Before we go to the break, we are getting some breaking political news, as we have been talking for the past week or so. We are getting news out of Arizona that the count is over and that Democrat Christian Sonima has defeated Republican Martha McSally in the race for the U.S. Senate in the state of Arizona. That was obviously a contentious race. Lots of eyes on that. Again, Democrat Christian Sonima defeating Republican Martha McSally in the race for U.S. Senate in Arizona. We'll be back with more of this conversation with Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking with Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick about some of the issues here at the university, specifically Howard University Hospital and health services east of the river in wards 7 and 8. As we were discussing, Dr. Frederick, we, before the break, we talked about the hospital, but I want to drill down just a little bit more because Howard University's School of Medicine is 150 years old. You said 1,700 physicians in this city alone. In other words, you can't walk down the street without bumping into a Howard University doctor. But what does this situation, if it is not, rectified, what does this portend for the School of Medicine and, to a greater degree, the hospital?
Yeah, it potentially harms the hospital in terms of being in a circumstance where we are at a competitive disadvantage. And if you decrease the clinical material in the hospital to a level where you cannot provide clinical material for training for students and residents, then you shut down the College of Medicine effectively. And that obviously is the ultimate harm that can be done, and the ultimate harm that must be avoided, to be quite honest. We have been here, you know, since the people forget the hospital preceded the university in 1862. And then 5 years later, we started a university. And then in 1868, on November 9th, actually, we had the first classes for the medical school with five students and five faculty members. And look at what that has produced in terms of producing the largest number of black physicians in this country. So that vision was important. Now, one may say today, well, you know, students can go anywhere to medical school in the country. That's true. But the reality is, if you look at even the medical schools in this city, they took 15 black students or less. We took 84. So yes, they can certainly go elsewhere, but that's not the case. 80 of those students only had Howard University. 80 of the students who came to Howard this year in the class of 120 were only offered acceptance to Howard. And so we really have been still, and we still are providing an opportunity for people who otherwise would not have an opportunity to become physicians in this country. So I think what we do is critical. It's critical to the nation. And when you look at the healthcare statistics for disparities in terms of poor outcomes, what you're seeing more and more is that in communities of color, you have worse outcomes, but you also are having less physicians of color practicing in those communities. So cultural competency is becoming more and more of a lack of cultural competency by physicians, one of the determinants of outcomes of health. And so as a country, we have a responsibility to make sure that we are providing adequate healthcare professionals who are culturally competent and who will work in the communities at highest risk. And then some people look at this strictly from a financial circumstance. Well, there's a financial argument to do it as well, because if you can decrease the severity of those disparities and you improve the outcomes, not only does the amount of money we're spending on healthcare go down, but the productivity goes up if people are able to return to work and lead healthy lives as well. So there's a lot at stake in terms of, you know, what the district is doing and looking at, and there's a lot at stake for the nation because of the role, the very vital role that Howard University plays in the nation's healthcare personnel production. Dentists, we have the only dental and pharmacy school in the district. Again, underappreciated, I think, very often by the district, but the only dental school and the only pharmacy school in the district. We have obviously the medical school, and then we have a nursing and allied health school as well, mm-hmm. producing professionals in physical therapy, occupational therapy, etc.
If you had your druthers, how would you like to see Howard University Hospital's participation in this East End Equity Act? Would it be a partnership? Would it be, you know, I don't know, some kind of, I don't know.
I'm very comfortable with the proposal that we had put in, and I'm very comfortable with that being made public. Our proposal was that we would move Howard University Hospital to Southeast. Mm-hmm. And be in the neighborhood that has the highest need. Along with that, I think moving the only dental school in the district, the only pharmacy school, the nursing and allied health school, and the medical school to that complex, using that as an anchor for a different kind of gentrification. We would put students there from the ages of 17, 18, all the way to trainees in their early 30s in that neighborhood. I think you get a different kind of gentrification. That's one of the concerns people have been raising in the city. And you have competent African-American physicians and nurses and physical therapists who will live and work in the neighborhood, taking care of a community that has for a long time been underserved. Has this been done elsewhere? Not with an African-American base, but it has been done elsewhere. If you look at Lake Nona in Florida, The Tavistock Company has done a major development around Lake Nona, where they've anchored a medical school, the University of Central Florida. They built a medical school for University of Central Florida. They built a new VA hospital, and they use that as an anchor to build an entire community around that neighborhood, a fantastic community that was able to attract the headquarters of the United States Tennis Association, et cetera, ultimately. And I think it would be great to give the Citizens Award 7 and 8 that type of big opportunity, create a different type of economic development zone, bring restaurants into that neighborhood, give them opportunities to work in an acute care hospital, give them opportunities to become physicians, let them see physicians in their backyard, give them an opportunity to become dentists, give them an opportunity to participate in what that gentrification now looks like in that neighborhood as you begin to build restaurants and have to build apartments and, you know, residences.
Are you talking about like the plans for Prince George's County, not just putting a hospital, but a community
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. And I think that, you know, it's fine time that we probably did something of that nature to support that community in the best way possible. I think they're well deserving of it. Howard University has, you know, been loyal to that community, regardless of where we've been located in the city, and we'll continue to. And I think this would be a great way if we could actually be in that neighborhood.
Dr. Wayne Frederick, Howard University, thank you so much. Good to see you, Doc. And hopefully I'll see you back before the end of the year, but if not, Happy New Year.
I'll try to make it back before then.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming in, and good luck to you.
All right. Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, November 12th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.